Before we dive into today's episode, I want to share an exciting opportunity with you. The Breaking Free Workshop will teach you a step-by-step guide to turn your passions into profit. Join us for a transformative experience where you'll learn how to smash through your career plateau with a personalized plan in 5 strategic steps, avoid common mistakes that could be holding you back, and identify critical actions for the next month to accelerate your progress toward your goals. Don't miss this opportunity to take control of your career destiny and create the lifestyle you desire. Your first workshop is free. Register now for the Breaking Free Workshop. Visit smashingtheplateau.com/workshops for all the details. That's smashingtheplateau.com/workshops.
I started becoming impatient because of when you start to see the other side and you feel it and you live it, I had difficulties actually going back to work.
In this episode, we have the pleasure of speaking with Damien Schroes, a seasoned professional who took the bold leap from a secure engineering position at a Fortune 500 company to the exhilarating world of entrepreneurship. Damien's journey is not just about making a career switch. It's a testament to strategic planning, risk aversion, and passion for teaching technology. He'll walk us through the pivotal moments that led him to quit his 9-to-5 job, the transition challenges he faced, and how he utilized community resources like business networking to pivot his side hustle into a thriving B2B training service specializing in Microsoft Office. If you're seeking inspiration to embrace entrepreneurship while balancing family life, tune in to discover how Damien transformed his expertise into a flexible and rewarding business. Now let's welcome Damien Schroes. Damien is a former engineer with 18 years of experience working for a Fortune 500 U.S. company that has an R&D facility in Luxembourg. In 2013, Damien started EasyTech as a side hustle to experience entrepreneurship while preserving a steady paycheck. In September 2016, Damien finally quit his 9-to-5 to offer Apple training and consultancy services in Luxembourg and regain control of when and how he can dedicate time to his family and to his work. Damien, welcome to the show.
Thank you, David. Thank you for having me.
Great to have you on. And yes, your bio is a perfect descriptor for many of the things that we talk about on Smashing the Plateau. I want to actually start off with a deeper dive into the actual transition out of your 9-to-5 job. What was the specific trigger that led you to quit when you did?
So when I decided to work part-time, I didn't know how long it would take for me to actually leave the 9-to-5. And I had in my mind the goal of replacing somehow my salary, right? So if I was able to generate as much revenue as I have my salary from the day job, that would be a good sign that I could quit. I don't like taking big risks, especially financially speaking. And so that was my original goal. But the part-time was actually a day and a half. So I was still working 3.5 days for my employer. So that's not a lot of time to do the prospecting, I was already starting serving customers. So I didn't have enough bandwidth and also capacity for actually replacing the salary. It was impossible actually to have as much salary given that I was starting out. You know, when we start out on our own, we tend to price ourselves very low as well.
So yes, that's quite common.
That's very common as a kind of mistake, a newbie mistake when we are solopreneurs. And so I think it was a year and a half through it that I realized it's going to take 10 years. It's going to take too much time before I would be able to leave. And for some reason, even though I'm a patient person, I started becoming impatient because of when you start to see the other side and you feel it and you live it, I had difficulties actually going back to work. And so at one point I had to decide, okay, but when do I leave? When do I decide to leave? And then I changed my goal and I looked at how much money we needed from the family point of view to pay our expenses, right? And so we contribute, my wife and I. And so I said, okay, this is the amount of money that I need in order to contribute to the family. So what about, since I still have a paycheck, what about setting aside money in a savings account so that I have at least 18 months worth of that amount, so that even if I don't pay myself a salary, I can still contribute to the family. And that became the second goal. And I think it was end of 2015, beginning of 2016, when I realized, okay, so this is how much I'm able to save on a monthly basis. This is where I'm at. I had the impression, okay, so by September, I should reach my goal. And so I sent my notice. I think it was in March or in April. I had 3 months. Actually, I had to tell 3 months in advance that I wanted to quit. Yeah. So yeah, that's how I decided in the end to pull the plug.
Yeah. Okay. So you had a very specific metric in mind and you met the metric.
Exactly. Yeah.
Can you talk a little bit more? You mentioned you started to feel it and live it. Can you talk a little bit more about what that means to feel it?
Well, to feel it, it's like, I think part of me was always a little bit independent. Even when I was working for that Fortune 500 company, I tend to join like innovation hubs and stuff where I could be creative. It would be like entrepreneurship, right? Being entrepreneurial inside a large organization. But as soon as I started to get a little bit of success on my own and see that I was helping people, I don't remember the exact trigger. I think it was a person that I helped with their Mac or with their Wi-Fi, because at the beginning I was doing a little bit of everything. And the gratitude, the feeling of helping someone and being entirely responsible for that positive outcome for that person, just based on my knowledge, right? It was just based on the fact that I had worked on that and learned by myself for years and years and years. And realize, oh, from what I have in my brain, I can help people. And in return, I can be rewarded financially. And that's the kind of feeling that made me impatient, because I started to resent the office politics. One of the reasons why at one point I decided to ask for a part-time job was and start my own business on the side was like the travesty of performance reviews, right? That's something I could not. I was so fed up with those performance reviews, this kind of, I don't know. So all in all, yeah. And seeing some traction, seeing some positive impact, that's when I was really committed to have that amount of money in my savings account so that I could live and have some cushion.
Yeah. And Damien, how did you figure out what business model you wanted?
Well, at the beginning, I'm not sure that I really figured out. So I'm the kind of person who likes experimenting. And because I'm in the Apple world, I'm also impacted by Steve Jobs and the Apple ecosystem. And I remember that when Steve Jobs came back to Apple in 97, Apple was in a really dire situation. They were selling, I don't know, hundreds of different models of computers. It was impossible to really understand what they were selling. And so what Steve Jobs did was say, look, this is a table. I want to see all my products on this table, And he divided, he made a matrix, a 2x2 matrix. And he said B2B, B2C, basically, right? So consumer and enterprises and desktop, laptop. We need four computers. And I was inspired by this and I decided to do the same. I split my business in B2B, B2C, training and consulting. And my goal initially during the first 2.5 years, my goal was to have a client in one of the four quadrants. And I managed to have those three out of four. The only one I did not manage to have was B2B training, which ironically is now my number one money generator for the business. But I managed to have at least three out of the four. And that gave me an idea of, okay, pricing, how easy is it to find the clients, but how also do I like this kind of work, right? It's also, for me, it was important to find something that I would enjoy. And yeah, and then I realized very quickly that doing training and consulting for consumers was very difficult to find new clients. And even when I got one client, that client would call me back 2, 3, 4. Last week, I had a client who called me 5 years after the first time I helped them. So I realized, no, B2C, forget about that. I need to switch to B2B. And I really focused on B2B consulting.
Mm. As you were making these pivots, did you have a sense of how many you would need to make and how long it would take before you landed on something that you felt was sustainable and would be growing and meeting your financial needs?
That has always been, for me, the biggest, the most difficult part of my journey as an entrepreneur. Really, to be honest, every year I was doing some planning and some goals and revenue goals, and it's nice to do these exercises, but as an introvert, the weakest part of my business is really the lead generation. I hate emails. I hate sending, bombarding people with emails and asking for help and so on. And so at the beginning, it was, I didn't have enough inbound leads. And that's the reason that actually when I quit my job, the first tactical decision or strategic decision that I took and that paid off was to join a networking organization, a local networking organization. Well, it's actually a global one. Some people might already know about that. It's called BNI, Business Network International. They're everywhere. It started in 85 in the US. And there was one chapter in Luxembourg in 2016. And so in August, so 1 month before I actually officially left my job, I actually also had accumulated enough vacation days so that I could have a full month of holiday before starting on my own. And I think it was the first week of August, I visited that BNI chapter, and it took me less than 30 minutes to realize I need to be in that chapter to help me pivot from the B2C to B2B. Because at that time, 80% of my clients were B2C clients. And I knew that I could never have enough clients to meet the revenue goal. I didn't know at that time how much I would get from B2C, from B2B. Sorry. So did I say B2C or B2B?
You said you had 80% B2C.
Yes, 80% B2C. And I knew that I needed to flip it, but I didn't know how much I would get from that BNI experience. And actually, it took me between 12 and 18 months to go from 80% B2C to 80% B2B client.
Now, how did BNI help you transition from B2C to B2B?
So first of all, because the members of a BNI chapter are usually small business owners or solopreneurs like me, they tend to have a network of other, they also know other business owners or other small firms. And so first by them starting to trust me, and I was helping them. So maybe a third had Apple computers or iPhones and iPads. So I started to deliver service for them, and they realized, okay, Damien knows his stuff. And they started then recommending me, but not just to anyone, because when we are in a BNI chapter, we have the possibility to every week to tell in front of them, look, I'm looking for this kind of clients, right? So for instance, I'm looking for, I don't know, real estate owners. I'm looking for architects. So I was looking for the kind of B2B client that would be the most likely to have Apple computers or Apple devices. And so by every week telling them different kind of client that I would like to have from, slowly but surely, I started to have B2B client. And what is nice with B2B client is that, especially when we're talking about SMEs, I started to become their IT guy. They were too small to have somebody on staff to be the IT person. And so I became the IT guy of that SME. And what was nice is then it's much more recurring revenue, even though I never managed to sell retainers. It was still like, I wouldn't have to wait 2 years before they would call me back, right? That's the thing.
Yeah. What's your business model like today?
So today, it's mostly B2B training now. Because even though I was, so my goal was achieved in the sense that I was able to pivot from B2C consulting to B2B consulting, I also realized that I was going away from my original goal, which was to have as much flexibility as possible with my time and also being able to work from home. I wanted to work from home as much as possible and have as much flexibility as possible. And when you become the IT person of an SME, if they have an issue, you better get back to them and help them solve the problem. And so I became almost like a firefighter, and I don't like that. I hate this kind of situation. I hate being on call 24/7. And so at one point I must have projected that in the universe because even though I managed to have as more clients, I still didn't manage to get my revenue goal because I actually resented this kind of work at the end. And then thanks to one of my BNI chapter member, she's a business coach, she actually managed to get me into a special program in Luxembourg for small businesses that are not meeting their goal, right? So at one point, EasyTech was not near bankruptcy, but it was going not so well. And so I managed to get into that special program, go through I don't know how many weeks of courses and workshops that she was facilitating, and getting a mentorship as well, and also doing much more strategic exercises that I had ever done by myself, and realized I need to go B2B training because I really enjoy training, teaching. And also what I really realize is that part of it can be done remotely, right? I can teach from my office. And I don't know, it must have been a good alignment of planets because we are talking about 2018, right? So that program took place in 2018. I started to make the pivot end of 2018. In 2019, I finally got my first large client for training. And at this point, I realized Apple training wouldn't fly, right? In large enterprises, it's not what you have. But the good thing is, because I had worked for 18 years for this American company, obviously Microsoft Windows, Microsoft Office, but I realized, okay, first of all, I can speak very well English. I'm bilingual English, French. And also, my superpower was I knew perfectly the Excel functions and the formulas in English and the interface of Microsoft Office in English. And so I contacted a bunch of training institutes. One of them, they only had French-speaking trainers. And so that was a match, perfect match. They had a lot of clients, especially in Luxembourg, where 50% of the population are foreigners. So a lot of big international community. English is the, I would say, biggest language for large enterprises. And so that we're talking about June 2019, I started providing Microsoft Office training with that client, and then COVID hit, and then everybody needed to migrate to online, right? They needed, they had plans to migrate to Microsoft 365 and Microsoft Teams, and suddenly they had to, and nobody knew how to use those tools. So they were looking for trainers, and I was there at the right place at the right time. And I think the revenue doubled between 2019 and 2020. And I was then fully booked for providing training sessions.
And is that still the primary thing that you provide is Microsoft training?
Yes, yes. Today, it's the primary revenue driver is, yeah, exactly.
Wow. I wanted to ask you if you could maybe say a few words about how community has been really powerful in supporting your success. I mean, you've given two examples of how you've been connected with other people, but I wondered if you could, you know, from a higher level, maybe talk a little bit about, especially corporate refugees might want to think about doing proactively so they can tap into the power of community.
Yeah. So for me, community, so I already talked about the local ones, the BNI chapter, but I'm also into global communities, international communities. And it started for me quite early. I think it was before I left my corporate job. I was listening to a podcast, it was called the Sean West podcast. And that person who had this podcast was very good also at building community. And so I became a member, a paid member of the community. And so I started to meet other people, and they were from different stages of entrepreneurship. I went to Austin, Texas twice for the conference that they were organizing. And that was in actually October 2016 and then 2017. And where I met a bunch of people that I still have contact with. One of them designed the logo of Macpreneur, what I'm trying to do now online. I met my accountability partner. She's from Australia. We talk every week or every 2 weeks on Saturday, and we talk about our goals and we have commitments and discoveries and so on. And that helps a lot to be able to speak with someone who understands you, right? So my family has always been supportive, but I can't speak too much too long with my wife, otherwise she's shutting down, right? It's difficult to, if you don't have in your family somebody who has his own business or her own business, it's difficult to have these elaborate conversation and back and forth. And since that Sean West experience, then I went to the Upreneur Summit. I don't know if you know Chris Ducker.
I do.
Yeah.
Yes.
So I attended two of his summits before COVID, and I became then a Upreneur Incubator member. So I'm still a Upreneur Incubator member. And just being part of a community with people who speak the same language, understand the struggle, right? That's for me super valuable. And also what I realized, and I did not anticipate that, because I still consider myself a newbie, even though I've 10 years behind me as an entrepreneur, even at the beginning, I was already able to help people, other entrepreneurs, not necessarily because I had some experience as an entrepreneur, but more because I had some experience as an employee, or I was in the workforce for a long time. So just if I have one word of encouragement for corporate refugees who are not sure whether they would go on their own and they are 40 plus or 50 plus. No, it's an asset. You have a great asset. You have developed communication skills. You have developed so many skills as an employee that you will be able to translate that in the entrepreneurial world as well.
Yeah. Damien, thank you for sharing that. We've covered a lot of territory in today's conversation. And thank you for sharing your story so deeply. If somebody wants to learn more about you, access any resources you have, or get in touch with you, where is the best place for them to go?
So the best place is my new venture, the thing that I'm doing now on the side, my side gig to EasyTech, which is Macpreneur. So I'm back to my Apple roots, and where I'm with Macpreneur, I'm trying to help solopreneurs who run businesses primarily from a Mac. And so, they can find me on macpreneur.com. I have created a special link for Smashing the Plateau listeners. It's macpreneur.com/smashing. And they will get a page for them with additional information and also the ability to actually get personalized tips. So Mac productivity tips.
Sounds great. Well, Damien, thank you so much for taking the time to join us today on Smashing the Plateau. My guest has been Damien Schur, who is the explainer in chief with EasyTech. Thank you, Damien, for joining us.
Thank you very much for having me, David.
Making the leap from the corporate career track to entrepreneurial business ownership can be done more effectively when you follow a system. In our Breaking Free workshop, you'll learn the 5 steps to smash your plateau, craft a weekly progress plan, and avoid common mistakes. This workshop is for dreamers, risk takers, and those ready to accelerate their business journey. Your first workshop is free. Visit smashingtheplateau.com/workshops for details and to secure your spot in the next workshop. Don't miss out on this opportunity for a career transformation. That's smashingtheplateau.com/workshops. Join us on our next episode of Smashing the Plateau for more wisdom from industry leaders. Until then, keep striving, keep believing, and keep smashing.